Each weekday, a member of the community is invited to Coffee at KYUK to discuss news and information relevant to Bethel and the Kuskokwim Delta. Sometimes light, sometimes serious, Coffee at KYUK is where our community connects.
Hello, 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 up and down the Cusco. We're also shouting out to the Yukon and the Coast, Grady Deaton here, alongside with Christy Schallenberger. Coffee at KYUK is the name of the game, and with us this morning also is Tiffany Zalkowski. Without any more further ado, I'll pass it on to Christy. Good morning.
Good morning. So Representative Tiffany Zalkowski, who is a Democrat from Bethel, was gearing up for her second year in her first full term, and like all of us, found her life and profession derailed by the coronavirus pandemic. Zalkowski and her colleagues in the legislature passed a $4.5 billion state operating budget aimed at economic relief for Alaskans in record time, which was signed by Governor Mike Dunleavy earlier this month. Representative Zalkowski is with us today to talk about the budget and what the pandemic means for future legislative sessions. Hi, Tiffany. Glad to have you with us.
Good morning, Christy. It's great to hear from you.
So where are you now, and what has it been like for you at the legislature during this pandemic?
Yeah, well, thank you for having me on this morning. It's great to connect with my favorite public radio station in Alaska. unfortunately, I, like many of my rural legislative colleagues, remain in Juneau for the time being, but I'm hoping that I can return home in the next couple of weeks as the legislative session progressed, as the spread of COVID-19 continued to grow in Alaska. I had to make the very difficult decision once we were able to recess. I wanted to make sure that I was not exposed, but I also did not want to become an individual who could transmit COVID-19 into my home community and region. So, you know, it was not an easy choice. Alaska, we're in especially during difficult and uncertain times, we want to be at home surrounded by the people we love. So being away from my hometown has been really difficult, but I am trying to do my part to help Alaska flatten the curve so that I can travel home when it's safe. I think, you know, as a legislator, the COVID-19 pandemic cut our legislative session short, which meant we could not pass or devote as much time to our various legislative priorities. I had been working on a bill to address the ongoing crisis of missing and murdered Indigenous women. I was also supportive of a bill to recognize for the first time in our state's history Alaska's tribes, which we worked on in tribal affairs. We were also working on a bill to improve and strengthen the VPSO program. So although it cut our legislative session short when we were working on some important issues, I think it's really important that all Alaskans do their part to prevent the spread and transmission of this virus.
Mm-hmm. So I'm assuming you're sheltering in place in Juneau.
I'm sheltering in place, but I'm hoping that as we continue to see a flattened curve, that it can be safe to travel home and then, of course, quarantine to be able to get back to Bethel as soon as possible.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you also work in public health. So how did you apply your public health expertise to the budget, and what parts of the budget that you passed that the legislator passed that are notable, especially for rural Alaskans?
Sure. So I serve, you know, stepping into the legislature with my background in tribal health, it has positioned me well. So I serve as chair of the House Health and Social Services Committee. So what that allows me to do is, you know, early on in the session, our committee then makes recommendations to full finance on funding various programs, Medicaid, public assistance, child welfare, and many that fall under the purview of health and social services. I would also say that I gained a lot of experience and exposure in tribal health that informs my decisions and really allows me to have an enormous amount of influence and ability to share with my colleagues how all of these programs operate on the ground, particularly in rural parts of our state. So we need to make sure as we consider funding decisions related to the budget and programs like health and social services that all Alaskans have equitable access to these vital programs. This is one area that we see as a big net that casts some safety and some assurance to families when they really need it most. I think this is particularly important because there are many people in the legislature who don't have an understanding of what it's like in rural Alaska. There's probably a fair amount of Alaskans in the legislature who've never been to rural Alaska. So I think having a granular understanding of health policy, what it means to rural Alaska, goes a long way in being able to discuss it with my colleagues, whether it's a budget issue or a legislative bill looking at how to change how these programs operate to work best in rural Alaska.
Mm-hmm. And so what particular parts of the budget, I saw an article you wrote for Delta that was published in Delta Discovery, but what parts of the budget that are particularly notable for rural Alaskans?
Yeah, that's a great question. So, you know, a budget document at the end of the day is a values document. Anyone can stand up and talk about how something is important to them or they support a particular program, but you really find out what matters to a legislator or to the governor when it comes time to spend and budget Alaska's money. We funded a number of important programs in the budget within the legislature, including an increase in public broadcasting funding. We increased, the governor had cut so much from Medicaid last year that we both supplemented the money that he put forward in the FY20 budget, but we also continued to fully fund Medicaid funding for FY21, including reinstating the adult preventative dental program. We raised the funding levels for the VPSO program, which you might have remembered last year. And again, this year, the governor proposed cutting $3 million from rural public safety, so we fully funded the VPSO program. We put the power cost equalization endowment fund into place by doing the reverse sweep, which requires a three-quarter vote of the legislature to protect the power cost equalization moving forward into this next year, which, as you might remember, the governor wants to sweep the endowment fund to be able to use the power cost equalization funds for other services in the state. We also added an additional $30 million into public education outside of the formula funds. We made sure to fully fund community assistance, which supports work for our smallest communities. This year, I advocated hard for additional funding for maintenance and operations at the Quinnahawk Airport, which we know is having runway conditions that make it unsafe to land outside of daylight hours. I also advocated for funding for maintenance of the Kuskokwim Ice Road to connect our 30-plus communities along the Kuskokwim when the river freezes, both of which got into the budget, both of which were vetoed by the governor. And I fight as hard as I do for Medicaid funding and investment in rural public safety and power cost equalizations because I fundamentally believe that these programs are essential for our district and to Alaska. And, you know, I talk a lot about when we are having conversations around the budget, it's important that the legislature keep in mind the value of equity. You know, we hear a lot about equality, which means treating everyone the same. But equity means giving everyone what they need to be successful. And not every village, not every community, and not every region in the state has the same resources or starts at the same starting line. Especially, we see that especially in rural Alaska, where we do not have equitable, well-funded state resources like we see in urban areas of the state. And so our communities are not at the same starting line. So when I think about passing a meaningful budget, it's really important to me as a legislature because, as a rural legislator, because as budgets get cut, more often than not, the rural districts are often the first to lose out. And unlike large areas of the state, we do not have municipal or borough-funded safety nets, so rural Alaskans will just simply lose access to those services. So, alongside...
Cut you off, but I do want to bring you back to a point. The governor has vetoed hundreds of millions of dollars in funding and expects federal funding to fill that gap, and he says it's legal based on his advice from Attorney General Kevin Clarkson. And I think several of the the items that he wants to fund from federal funding are stuff that you have advocated for in the budget. What's your take on that decision? I think you were talking about it earlier, but specifically expecting federal funding to fill that gap. What's your take on that?
Sure. So he vetoed over $36 million in REAA, or what we call rural school funding. He vetoed over $2.5 million for public broadcasting. He vetoed both of the projects that I mentioned that we advocated for District 38, as well as Real ID outreach. He, in the face of a public health emergency, he vetoed over $30 million in Medicaid funding and so many other programs. You know, he has said, like you mentioned, Christy, that he can just backfill that with the Federal CARES Act, or the CARES Act is the COVID relief funding that's coming from the federal government. But as the legislative kind of legal and legislators are looking at those statements, the funding that was passed under the CARES Act has strict guardrails for what it can and cannot be used for. And what I've understood in some follow-up legal opinions from the legislative, from our legislative attorneys, is that that funding has to be used directly for COVID-19 response. So if the governor is not able to backfill vetoed funding, he will ultimately have endangered the state's ability to provide essential state services at a time when Alaskans are relying on it now more than ever, especially if it's found that Alaska is not using these funds in the right way, the state ultimately would have to repay those funds to the federal government. And so, you know, not only does it threaten the viability of these programs, it could also mean returning federal funds to the federal government.
Mm-hmm. And tribal sovereignty is also coming into focus, especially with ongoing travel restrictions. There are worries that these restrictions have limited what state officials and first responders can do. I've heard some people say health aides and public health nurses have been turned away. Airlines are also adhering strictly to these restrictions, but, you know, tribes are, remember the past epidemics, wiping out entire communities, so they're taking action themselves. What are your thoughts on these restrictions?
Yeah, I think that's a really great question. I think it's really important to understand that during a disaster declaration, especially like the one that we're seeing right now with COVID-19, is there's a lot of executive authority that's provided to the governor to respond to the needs of the state, which is why we see the executive branch issuing health mandates to Alaskans, kind of guiding how we can function during this time. Understanding, again, kind of stepping back to my experience in sort of tribal health and healthcare, is early on understanding that self-isolation is one of the few and most effective protective measures that we have during this virus, especially as the world waits for a vaccine or medical treatments. I was one of the first legislators to urge the governor to enact in-state travel restrictions and a statewide shelter-in-place order. I think it's really important for our tribes, our tribal organizations, our nonprofit organizations within our communities to be aligned as much as possible. Alaska is facing an unprecedented life, health, and safety emergency that we could not have ever anticipated would happen. I think it's one that generations from now, our descendants will look back on in the history books. I think our district faces a unique challenge in that we're a widespread region that is not connected by road. And despite that, you know, despite the challenges and the protective measures that we face, there are still going to be residents in our region that need basic things like cancer treatment or access to additional health care to maybe identify what a cause of chest pain would be. You know, we don't have roads that can connect Alaskans to a regional hospital. And so there remains a certain level of movement between communities that people need for life, health, and safety issues. I think ultimately, tribes, tribal organizations, and our region's leaders want the same thing, which is for people to be healthy, for people to be safe. And I think that we work best when all of our organizations work together as much as possible to ensure that residents, tribal citizens, and our communities are well taken care of.
And, you know, you kind of have a dual role. You're a lawmaker and you're also working for the Yukon Kuskokwim Health Corporation, and these roles are intersecting in a huge way. And, you know, I'm curious, how have you navigated those roles? And do you think, also kind of going back to the travel restrictions, because this has kind of been kind of, with, especially within your area of representation, do you think that the travel restrictions, do you think that they should be looser or stricter, or what's your take on that?
Sure. So I do just want to kind of say at the top that, you know, Alaska's legislature, we're a citizen legislature. The design of our state's governing body is to convene for a few months at the start of the year, but basically enable legislators to work in full-time employment for the remainder of the year. I think that there's been a lot of conversation at the legislature of how do we make that easier so that we have broad representation who come from all different backgrounds, whether they're families or somebody like me who's younger in my career, but I'm essentially a single woman trying to make ends meet in rural Alaska. And so, you know, I can't afford, unlike some of our more financially secure retired legislators, I can't afford to just do that one job a couple months out of the year. I, like everyone else in our district, have to pay heating bills and electricity bills and all of those things. And so, you know, I am really, you know, thankful that I've had an opportunity to be able to work in a full-time job outside of my legislative work. You know, I believe my background in tribal health has offered me a deep understanding, like I said earlier, of health policy and tribal policy, especially as we consider our budget and the laws moving forward. But I also work really hard to make sure that I keep my roles really independent of one another. So every session, I take a leave of absence from my full-time employment and do not engage in any work that's not related to my legislative obligations. This morning, I'm joining you in my official legislative capacity, and I'm not speaking on behalf of my full-time employer. And, you know, I approach my work because I, like many people in our district, and I've always said this in my public policy career, is I'm an Alaska Native woman first and, you know, somebody who works in public policy second. And so I continue to be a strong supporter of tribal sovereignty. As I mentioned earlier, I supported the creation of Alaska's first ever legislative committee on tribal affairs, which I serve as chair of. This session, we held extensive conversations on a number of topics related to tribal sovereignty. We were exploring how the state could pull from best practices from the Federal Indian Self-Determination Act. We we recognized the success of the Alaska Native Health Compact and other opportunities for the state to compact with tribes. You know, we were looking at Alaska's Tribal Child Welfare Compact to try to...
KYUK, to discuss news and information relevant to Bethel and the Kuskokwim Delta.
Sometimes light, sometimes serious, Coffee at KYUK is where our community connects.
If you'd like to suggest a guest or arrange to be on with us yourself, contact us at coffee@kyuk.org or call 543-3131 today.